feeling that I know is real, real, real. It's in the way you look, it's in the way you love, and I can see that this is real, is real. It's in the way you talk, it's in the way you touch. All right, so welcome to Funny Business, Women of Stand-Up Comedy. I'm Denise from the Lesbian Lounge, and I feel like a champion today. I've got the luck of a champ. I've got Jenny McNulty and Vicky Shaw in the same room together on this show. Doesn't get better than this. Welcome, ladies. Hi, hi. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Hi, Vicky.
Hello up there, radio land, internet land, World Wide Web land.
You're used to this. You're used to this. Vicky, how are you feeling? You okay?
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right.
It's Earth here. So yeah. I'm good considering.
Okay, great. Right? I mean, that's how I feel. I've been doing this for, 10 years now, and I still don't have the hang of it. So kudos to you, Jenny, for going to the next level and teaching online classes, which we'll get to.
But I didn't do it early in the morning, though.
I apologize. Quite the time difference. Quite the time difference.
I know everyone out there is like, it's what, 9:30 there? They're wimps. Well, whatever. There you go. There's the personal side of the business side of comedy.
Right.
We stay up late.
Yeah, we stay up late. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh, this is how am I going to do this? This is terrible. Late nights and then up early for something as crappy as this. Way to go.
No, it's fun.
I've done several interviews with you. I'm my first interview I did with you from a football field.
You did?
I was at practice. We're trying to coordinate the time. So I was standing at the practice field talking to you online.
Yes. Oh my God. Oh God. You have a fantastic memory. Holy crap. Wow. And Vicky, I think we've only spoke by phone, if at all.
Okay.
I think it had something to do with an upcoming gig or something. So this is, I just feel blessed because I never get the chance to really have one-on-ones. It's usually, on a stage introducing or, so this is great. So what I mentioned before is, Funny Business is really funny business. I think I always want to delve in to like, what's your earliest memories of knowing that you were funny? Like funny kid, funny teenager, funny in class, class clown.
I don't know about you. I was never a class clown. I was always a very good girl, very good. I mean, I was funny with my friends and said funny things. I would try to do like little accents and stuff. And I remember once when I was really young and I think it was Nixon was still in office, maybe, and it was midway through his term, and he was saying something about he was going to do something or other, and I'm just a stupid little kid. I'm like, well, you better hurry up. You only got 2 years left, and my parents just started dying laughing that I made this, and I thought, oh, look at that. That was funny. So that was one of the things I remember. But for the most part, I was just funny to my friends. I wasn't really a cut up in class or anything.
What about you?
Mine was, I knew I was funny in high school. Because I'd make everybody laugh, and I was a class clown, but everybody else was too. I didn't think I was special.
Right.
I just thought everybody did this because I had a lot of very funny friends, and maybe I just gravitated toward funny people.
Yeah.
And that could be it. But when I came out as a comedian. but when I started doing comedy. Come to find out, all my old friends and even cousins and stuff went, well, of course you were hysterical as a kid. And I went, I was? I didn't know it. They all thought, they were like, well, that makes perfect sense. Yes, you're hysterical. And because I did not get that kind of, my parents are not funny people and have no sense of humor. So, and I would always try to make them laugh.
Tough crowd. Yeah.
Do it. They would just look at me like I was crazy, I got a lot of that growing up, like that look of your parents looking at you going, what is wrong with you? So it wasn't until I knew I could make people laugh starting in high school, but everybody else could too. So it didn't come on to me until much later.
Was it, do you both feel like, was it at the urging of friends that they said, get up there, man, you could do this. Yeah. You could do this.
I completely was urging.
Yeah.
For me, it was more to get it, to actually go into stand-up. I had always wanted to do something in entertainment. I always, you know, thought that would be fun early, but I played sports, and sports and theater were always happening at the same time. So I never did theater, I never did plays, and I never did anything like that. And then I, you know, went through school, graduated, I got a job, and I was working in this research lab, and, you know, again, making my friends laugh and stuff, but I thought, nobody's going to waltz in here and go, hey, you with that white rat, come, let me take you to Hollywood and make you a star. I better do something. And in this lab, I was making all these doctors laugh. You know, when you make your friends laugh, it's one thing, but I'm making a brain guy laugh. So this, so I was just talking to some other people, and I thought, I think I'm going to try stand-up comedy. So I went and I watched, like, 4 open mic nights. And there were some people there that looked like they had lost a bet. I'm like, I don't know why they are up there. They are horrible. I could do at least that well. Because I would write jokes on the way to work. I lived and worked about 45 minutes away from each other. So I would kind of write jokes on the way to work for no reason other than to entertain myself. And I thought, maybe I should give this a try. So once I saw that, you know, it wasn't that hard, or it didn't seem to be that hard watching those other people not do very well, I could do it at least that well. And I tried it, and it went really well. So I just kept doing it.
Because I always hear this, but it wasn't until I did one stand-up show in my whole life, and that was it. I was good. I got the, you know, it was like the fix I needed to know, yeah, you probably shouldn't do this long-term. Like, it was fun. It was fun. It got a good reaction, but I felt like it was the longest 40 minutes of my life. Like, it just felt like it was taking forever. And I was really nervous about forgetting material. Like, and that's, I always wonder that too. Like, do you feel like, I know you have to kind of memorize things, but also you don't want to appear rehearsed because then that looks a little bit ridiculous. There's like a delicate balance of that, like not coming across as so rehearsed, but having it memorized and having the ability to wing it, you know, when you want to. Talk about that a little bit. Like, are you like hardcore stick to the script, or?
In the early days when I first started, yes. Yeah. It was very scripted, just because you have to first learn how to write, you know, and get it. The words have to be correct.
Yeah.
And then you have to memorize it, you know, and not forget it, because that happens many times. And then it wasn't until I had been doing comedy probably maybe even 9, 10, maybe a year, when it took that long for me to one day get on stage and finally not have to think about the words. Because by then I had been doing it enough. Right. And then at that point, I can remember vividly enjoying it. I didn't enjoy it. It was creative. I felt I enjoyed the creative part of it and the adrenaline part of it and that part of it. But it wasn't enjoyable until I didn't really have to think about that section of my act. And then once that happened, and then as you keep adding to your, as you keep writing, you hang on to the one you're comfortable with, then you add to it, and then you end with something you're comfortable with.
Right.
And it just gets bigger and bigger. And then at that point, now you're playing with it. And now I do have set things that the words are memorized. Mm-hmm. But that's just because I've done it a lot.
Right.
You know? And then you can play. Now you got the ability to play.
Right.
But you certainly don't have that ability in the early days. To me, I did.
What about you, Jenny? Same thing?
No, completely different, actually. But just to add on to that, Vicky, when I teach my classes, I always give you as an example of, she's just an excellent storyteller. So Vicky, like, and when you do your Olivia trips, she talks about what happened during that week, and it just makes it into this story, and you just sit there and go, wow, you know, how the heck? She talked about one thing for 4 hours. How did you do that? But she's just really great at conveying a story. For me, from the very beginning, I like to improvise, and I was probably doing comedy like 3 months. And when I started, it was early 90s, late 80s. Comedy clubs were everywhere in the United States, so you could get stage time, which is what you need when you first start. And So I had been I was doing comedy, and I was trying this improv thing where my dad was always like, no matter what you did, you could die somehow doing that if you weren't careful, right? So I started doing this improv joke where I'm like, give me any housing thing, give me any daily activity, and I'll show you how my father could say you could die doing that. And I did it a few times and then bailed on it, and the headliner I was working with, I'll never forget it, John Pinney, said to me, you're funny. Just trust yourself. Keep talking. Eventually, first of all, you have the microphone. Second of all, you can, get going. So for me, I too have my scripted material, because sometimes the audience doesn't want to play. Sometimes they just want to be talked to.
Right.
But for me, if they like to talk back, I'm in heaven. Because for me, I really like to improvise with them and have fun with them. And granted, yeah, I have an outline in the back of my head. I remember my things in chunks. I talk about my football chunk. I talk about my girlfriend chunk. What's going on in the day chunk, or local city stuff. So I've got those chunks memorized, and then kind of weave it in and out, based on what they're talking to me. But sometimes they don't want to talk, so you just got to kind of go through your set order.
Audiences dictate a lot of mm-hmm. what you're going to do.
I was going to say that.
Things that I know with good comedians is that they can judge their audience.
You have to read the room, right?
Is that just according to their audience?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have to gear your material? Because, I mean, like, let's be honest, not every gig's a queer gig or a pride festival. I mean, you got to do the mainstream clubs as well. Do you feel, I feel like we've come so far, like we can actually go into a mainstream club and talk about our gay lives. But yet it all depends on where you are. So you do have to kind of read the audience, read the room, know what you're getting yourself into before diving in.
I don't change my material.
No.
So much. Yeah, I mean, I talk about everything I normally would. The only thing, if it's really straight, a predominantly straight audience, is you may spend a little more time preparing them. You know what I'm saying? Before I just jump into my girlfriend stuff.
Right.
I've got to let them know, one, I'm a lesbian.
Yeah.
Right.
Two, that I have a girlfriend. And then I slowly bring them into that. Now, when I do an all-gay thing, you don't have to do that.
Right.
They're already there.
Yeah.
But, I don't have any problem with a straight audience. They're perfectly wonderful and have a great time. And matter of fact, they're, like, delightful. I really enjoy that because it just is a different dynamic.
Right.
But I don't change anything. The only time I ever have to kind of think about what I'm saying is if it's an event where children are there.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
I have to kind of watch it then.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't change it for anything else,
That's great. That's really, like, that just, it blows me away. I'll never forget the time we had Chantel Carrere come to a Pride Festival and do a set. And both Don and I had pushed so hard for her. And there was just way too many kids at this thing. And I could see people cringing. And I was just like, oh, wow, we didn't think this through. Wow. Yeah, lesson learned. So that's cool. But let's talk a little bit about, balancing the type of career that stand-up comedy is. Like, you've got to have a partner that's okay with you being gone, being on the road, having a hectic schedule, having people come up to you all the time. Is that, do you have to, like, actively seek out the right person?
Find phone numbers in your pocket when they do the laundry and go, excuse me, who's Linda? She books a club, I swear to God, she books a club.
Well, I came home one time from a Pride event that was outdoors, and so the artists changed clothes in a trailer. And I just put on my clothes. I don't have, but gay guys, the drag queens, I mean, they have tons of clothes.
Oh, yeah.
They're changing. I kid you not, I came home with a tiny thong in my suitcase. These guys had thrown, and I just went, ah. It was a gay guy. Yeah, right.
Oh, my God.
Why would a gay guy need a thong? I don't know, but they did. It was beautiful, but it wasn't even close to my size. I know the gay guy was a little bitty guy.
Oh, my God.
It was
God.
Like, that one was hard right there.
That's a tough one, yeah.
But the other, like, the good thing, I don't know about Jenny, because you're in the same situation, I met my partner when I was doing stand-up. So they already know what you're doing.
Right.
You know, she was also very, I mean, supportive, and that was my job, and also knew what I was doing was important besides being my job. So that was good. But she did have to deal with, and we talked about this years, and we've been together now 17 years, but in the early days, it was interesting because she said, all my life I've had to deal with jealousy. And then look who she ends up with, you know, a lesbian comedian that travels all over doing lesbian events.
Right, right.
And it was kind of like, well, and I also believe that's the universe too. Oh, well, here's your lesson. Let's learn it, you know, because we all get that. You know, we all have something we have to struggle with and that we have to learn from. And it was funny because that was hers. And then she's great. But it took her a little while. I'm not comfortable with this. You have underwear in your suitcase.
That's great. That is great.
Me, I met my partner. I was already doing comedy, and my partner is also she's in television editing and production and TV. So she's in the business. So the time away, she's not only understands, she's good with. She's I get that a lot when I come home. When are you going on the road again?
Yeah.
But it's it's like you said. It's just they have to know that going in, and I think they know us too. You know what I mean? You know what your partner is going to do and is not going to do.
Yeah.
I'm a Lion fan, for God's sakes. Detroit Lions, which for all of you out there that don't know, follow American football. Won one playoff game in my lifetime, okay? And I'm a fan. I am loyal. If you look up loyal in the dictionary, there's my stupid mug right there going, oh, yeah, I'm loyal.
Yeah, so. I get that. I get that. That's fantastic. What do you, I was just thinking, obviously, in light of what's going on in the States right now, it feels like life as we know it is so different. Like, everybody's so divided, whether it's race, politics, religion. There's just so much division. Do you feel like there's anything that's off limits, like, right now, particularly? Like, I mean, I don't mean, like, in light of this past weekend, but I just mean in general, because it is a political, it's a big election year and people are so passionate. It's like a different level of passionate. And I feel like sometimes I know myself over here, this is the God's honest truth. I've been in England 5 years. The other day I went to get coffee at this brand new coffee shop. And the guy said, where are you from? And I was like, oh, I'm from the States. And he goes, oh, wow. And I was like, but I had to get out of there because Donald Trump, you know. But I mean, seriously, like, I knew knew what he was thinking the minute he said, oh, the States. Like, I could just see. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I just find myself, like, being so guarded. Do you feel that, like, when you're up there? Is that going on? Is it just something I'm seeing because I'm watching CNN too much?
I haven't run into that yet. No. I don't do a lot
of... Really? In Texas? Don't you get your crowds? Aren't they more... I would think...
Well, I don't really work in Texas.
I just live here. I just live here.
No, actually, I did. the audience... No, I don't do a lot of political stuff anyway.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
So it's not, I don't have that issue. So I don't get there. I mean, I do say vote, and I do talk about, and I'll say something about Hillary. I mean, I'll do that, but I don't go into it.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't.
Yeah.
It just seems like eggshell.
I'm not really a political humorist either. I don't know how Kate Clinton does it. I would be just so angry when I read that stuff. Yes. I can't get to a funny place with it. I just go to wanting to, just be enraged, and that's not good for comedy. Sam Kinison.
There you go.
But,
or Lewis Black.
Or yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It works for them. It doesn't work for me. So that's part of it. But I think you have to kind of be a little bit aware of who you're talking to, but only in terms of your own self-preservation for that show. I think it's also very important to say things. If I'm doing a straight club, I make sure that I come out every show because I think that's important.
Yeah.
And it's just, people ask me that in my class too, and I'm like, no, there's nothing off limits. Absolutely, there's you
never.
I suppose if you could work really hard, you might find a way to make a rape joke funny, but why? To what end? So you have to look at what you're trying to say. So if you're making a political comment that needs to be made, which I think they do need to be made in these times, make it. But you know, you're going to have to dance around that for a little bit. You talk about structuring your material. You're going to have to get some nice fluffy stuff in front of it and some nice fluffy stuff behind it to get them back, because you risk losing that crowd, you know. So you have to kind of weigh the balance between what I do feel is our duty to say important things. You know, you don't want to just get up there and do dick jokes and whatnot. Not that there's anything wrong with dick jokes, but you have a platform. Use it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to use that platform. On the other hand, they've also paid to see comedy.
Right.
They're there to laugh. They're there to get away from all the crap they're seeing on TV. So they kind of don't want to be drilled with that either. So it's just a delicate balance. But no, I don't think there's anything really off limits. It's just a question of, you know, if you're working a bar in the middle of nowhere, you know, well, maybe it's more important there. I don't know. But just it's important to do, but I wouldn't. Me personally, because I just don't like to have to work that hard.
It's the person and what they want to say and how they say it,
right?
You know, and yeah, I don't think anything should be off limits ever. And I mean, even in my show, you know, I'll say something and the audience might go, ugh. And I go, oh, so that's your line, you know, that's your limit,
right?
You
know? Right,
that's the threshold,
that's the gauge,
okay,
right?
Now
there.
I know where it is, okay.
Yeah. That's funny. That's funny. Yeah, I worried about that. And you know, have either of you performed outside of the U.S.?
I did some military tours, but it was for the most part, you know, United States service people. So
right,
it was yes, it was in Iraq and Afghanistan, but it was for American people, so it wasn't. You know.
I haven't. I would love to, but I haven't.
Well, Canada, does that count?
Sure.
Canada. Sorry, Canada.
I've done Canada.
sure, that counts. Yeah, I always worry about, like, if anybody, because I remember, I think it was Dana Goldberg that was over here for a couple of shows, and I didn't get to see her show, but I remember talking to her before, and what awful timing. She came over right when we were having riots over here.
Oh, jeez.
And I know, I was so worried about her. But I wondered, like, if there was, like, did she worry about the humor translating? Because I find British humor here has such extremes. It's either really silly and really goofy,
right,
or really dry and no in between. Like, you know, I mean, there's a couple comedians over here that I like and that I've actually gone to see. That I like them that much that I would go see them. But for the most part, when you see what's on, you know, regular television, like, that's when I'll just look at my wife and I'm like, maybe explain that to me just a little bit, like, pause it, explain it to me, you know, and it's sometimes I just go, it's not funny. Like a lot of panel shows and it's always so, like, I understand things have to be topical, but I always felt like a lot of, I always feel like the best genuine comedy comes from your own personal observations and less about what's going on with the government and the parliament and the royal family. And it's like the same stuff over and over and over again. So yeah, it's really strange. I would love to see you guys over here. It would just be like a break.
I know,
that would
be fun.
Yeah, we'll work on
that. I've had a lot of British people in the audience that have all said, you should come because your comedy would go wonderfully.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to come to see.
It's a different, kind of.
Well, because both of us perform a lot in Provincetown, Massachusetts, which is, you know, draws a lot of people from all over.
Yeah,
so I've had it too. A lot of people from Europe that are like, oh, you should come here, you should come there.
Yeah.
They'd love you. And it would be great to see. And I always love Monty Python. And they have a blend right there.
Yeah.
Some of their stuff is very dry and some of theirs is just very, you know, goofy and
crazy,
silly. And
right.
So I think they would get it, and I think, you know, just immersing yourself in it and the whole fish out of water aspect of it would be kind of fun, too, just trying to, you know, figure out what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
I did that when I went to Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, trust me, the fish out of water thing gets old. I've been here 5 years.
That's the only thing.
Still
gotta,
a fish out of water.
Yeah, same thing, because people do that when comics come from New York to Los Angeles. That's the first thing they do is they make that joke, and everybody here in Los Angeles is like, yeah, we've heard it. So, you know. find an interesting way to say it, I guess.
Yeah, I think right now I've been I love being at a gay event and seeing like an out lesbian stand up comedian. But they're so far and few between, you know, like you've got Pride season and then maybe one or two festivals and then that's kind of it, unless you're actively seeking them out, you know, and following their careers. So it's, I end up finding myself watching more mainstream stuff. And right now I'm so hooked on Sebastian Maniscalco. Is that his name?
Do you know What's his name?
Sebastian Maniscalco.
I don't know him. Maybe
it's an Italian thing because everything that he talks about reminds me of my childhood, you know, and my relatives and everything. It's really, really good. And I think that's the best thing about going to a Pride festival or a lesbian comedy festival or something, is that the stuff that they're talking about, you can honestly relate to. You can honestly relate to somebody bitching about their girlfriend or about their experiences. And that's, you know, part of what brings everybody together and makes them laugh. Do your family and your girlfriends know that they're pretty much, you know, you're going to discuss them? Are they okay with it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They know. No, they don't have to come with a disclaimer.
That's a given.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anytime you get that finger waved in your face, that does not make the stage.
Yes. Yeah, I went through that with the show stuff. My wife would just be like, that's not for the radio. My mother yeah. still does it. That's not for the yeah. show. So, yeah, that
my
is funny.
That once, but when we first started seeing each other, I just told her up front, I said,
it's fair game.
If you have a problem with this, then we shouldn't see each other.
Because it's going to happen again.
It's going to happen. and she told me later, when I first started putting her in my act years ago, it was natural. You know, it was just organic how it started to happen. And I didn't even think about it. And then she went with me to a gig. And it was the first time she had heard it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that she hadn't heard it. And after the gig, she came up to me and goes, you talked about me. I said, yeah, we had this conversation. And then I said, we talked about it. She goes, and then she actually said these words. She said she didn't, but she did. She goes, I thought you'd change. I don't think so. And then we came home, and my daughter, who's actually here, my daughter and my son, you know, she came in and she goes, your mother talked about me on stage. And they both went, welcome to our world. You know? She's been talking about us since the beginning. You know?
That's great. Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, yeah, they all know.
They know it's going to be.
Even when I first started, my kids were young. Haley, my daughter, was like 7, 8. And the boys were young junior high. And they would go with me to the clubs and sit in the back, you know. And they would get, little Shirley Temples and all that in the back. And so one time my daughter, who was the youngest, was very sensitive, you know.
Oh,
if she did something funny and we laughed at her, she'd start crying. Right. You know, so I knew you couldn't talk about her. And so I was on stage and I did some jokes about the boys. And I remember coming to the back of the club and this little girl come running at me, you didn't talk about me! And I... You cry. No, I don't. Yes, you do. And I said, so it's okay with you if I talk about you? Yes. Oh, she was mad. And I said, okay, all right, I'll talk about you.
Oh, all right. Fantastic.
I'll put you in the act.
That is fantastic. That's so funny. How typical. How typical. Little girls, that's excellent.
The progression they make when you first, I actually... took me a long time to figure my stuff out. So I was doing comedy for quite a while before I realized I was gay. And then when I look back, I'm like, how the hell did I not know? But once I came out on stage within months, just because it felt so disingenuous. I always talked about sports. For whatever reason, I think when you come out later, you're more eager to get it all out there.
Too. Yeah. Purge. So,
you know, I would always talk about it, but, so I've had like a few girlfriends now through the course of my career. And it's funny how they, you know, at first they're like, oh my God, I remember that my first girl was like, can I come to all your shows? And I'm like, yeah, that'd be great. And that wears out so fast.
Totally, yeah, yeah.
After about 3 months, they're like, yeah, no, go ahead. Let me know when it's a big one.
It's true. My wife hasn't listened to a podcast in, like, I don't even know, 5 years, 6 years. That's hilarious. It's so funny. It's so true. Talk to me a little bit about the difference, like, then and now. Like, I think a while ago, everybody thought, like, comedians had somebody managing their career and agents, because they always assume the ultimate goal is a sitcom, a TV show, Ray Romano, you know, that type of thing. But in reality, the reality is you basically do all your own work, don't you?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, and I always have. So yeah. I've never not done it that way. You know, I mean, I had a couple of agents, but they wouldn't last. I mean, they didn't last long. And so, no, this isn't working.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is mostly, it's all me, you know. I'd love to have an agent, but I don't. and I mean, if they could get me jobs, great.
Right.
You know. Now, I do have agents that will call me, like, on a per-job thing and go, I have this gig, blah, blah, blah. And I'll go, yeah, and I'll pay you, you know, your fee. Right. But it's a one-time
thing. Right.
So I have those, but
yeah. I have for, like, because I'm in Los Angeles now, so, like, for commercials or for, you know, small parts in movies or TV or whatever, I have an agent for that, but I do all my own comedy stuff. Yeah, it's awful.
But does it interfere? Does it interfere with the creative process at all?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, we spend so much time, you know, we have a show coming up next week, and, you know, we're just, you know, promoting it and trying to get the word out there, and it's wonderful now with the internet, with Facebook, with all the different ways of getting stuff out there. But now with it, you know, it's hard to figure out where to find them and where to get that. It used to be you would call up the paper and it would be printed in the paper, and that's how you did your advertising. It's simple. But now there's just so many different ways to get the word out. It's hard to find that one that really does spread the word to your show.
Yeah,
and
it's overwhelming.
You spend way, way, way more time doing that. At least I do than I do. You know, it would be wonderful to be able to just sit back and write funny things.
Yeah. It's so true. Wow. Well, it's good to know. People need to know that, you know, it's not like just, you didn't just like wake up, you know, slap some lipstick on and walk up on the stage. There's so much more to it. So tell me a little bit about, is it true? Like, is that the ultimate goal? Like, Jenny, you mentioned acting bit parts and stuff like that. Is there an ultimate goal, or just being able to do stand up is rewarding in itself?
I think, to me, there's not an ultimate goal. I am completely open to whatever the universe brings to me.
Well,
but
it's
not like I'm going to go out and do that.
Right.
I'm not going to go, if I don't get a TV show, my life is worth nothing.
Right.
You know, it's like, I know that what I do right now is important. I'm happy with that. And if that's what it is, then that's what it is. If something comes along, we'd like you to come try this, I'll do it. I always love the fact that I saw before she died, Joan Rivers said, I have never turned down anything. Never. Because she's done everything, you know, and that's my philosophy. I will never turn it down. I won't. If somebody calls and says, I've got this gig, and if it's not something like stand up, but it's MCN or this or that or the other, I will do it. I will do it. It doesn't, you know, would you consider? Yes, I would consider it. Give it to me. I will. Because you don't know what that's going to do. You don't know where that's going to lead.
Right.
You don't know what that's going to mean to me personally later. I don't know. So I'm never going to turn down anything, ever. Unless I can't do it, obviously. But I open it up and just go, bring it on, whatever. Right. There is. I'll do it.
She's doing a bar mitzvah in 3
years. Yeah, I'm doing a bar mitzvah. No.
And what about for you, Jenny?
A children's party. I'm doing a children's party.
You're out in L.A.,
My goal started out just that. I mean, I grew up in Detroit, and I started doing comedy when, you know, Tim Allen had his show and Roseanne Barr and all, and that was the goal. And it was, you know, you went to New York or L.A. L.A. was warmer. It was the main decision, but that's where the sitcoms were, and then... It just became, there's just some of them are wonderful, some of them are brilliant, some of them are just crap. And it's, you know, that's not where I want to go now. And I too would, you know, I like acting. I have that exercise thing that I do. I like teaching. I like doing a lot of different things in it. And it's just, it's really, I don't think I'd ever really give this aspect of it up. I wouldn't give stand-up up if, you know, I got this big, huge, you know, movie role or part or whatever. And I think that's why so many stand-ups will still go out and do shows occasionally. It's, there's something about that being in the moment and getting that laughter right there from those people in that moment and sharing that, because there's nothing like it. Even if when you watch stand-up on television, it's still different than being in the environment. And as I said, I like to improvise. So for me, each night is individual and unique and really fun. So I don't think I would ever give that part of it up.
I think it's like, it kind of reminds me of like theater versus going to the movies, like that,
right,
that instant feedback, you know, like that gasp or that applause or whatever. Like, yeah, that's, I mean, when you're filming a movie, you're not getting that, you know?
Right.
So yeah, that does kind of feed your soul, doesn't it? All right. I'll ask you guys each this, individual one. Do you ever remember like the bomb, does a bomb night stick with you, or a bomb joke, or when something bombs, does it stick with you, or can you brush it off?
We've never had one.
That's good.
No, I learned that early on at open mics. You can't, matter of fact, the bomb, when it happens, is telling you something. Mm-hmm. It's not that you just bombed, like you're a horrible person. It's telling you that didn't work.
Right.
So what was, now you got to step back and go, right, okay, what was it about that didn't work? Now I've got to learn something from it. So I have to step back and go, and it doesn't stick with you. You learned way early. You can't let that, let that stick. You have to go, oh, okay, it didn't work. Let's figure out what it did, what didn't work, or maybe it's just not funny.
Right.
And drop it.
Right.
But you have to, and you have to do it a few times to see, because I think that's funny. So what is it about what I'm thinking and the audience is hearing that isn't funny?
Right.
So I step back, readjust, mm-hmm, try again, step back, readjust, try it again. And then after a while, this is just not working, drop it and then move on.
Right.
Yeah. So,
right,
yeah, you don't enjoy the bomb.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But it's telling you, whatever it is not working. So it's not personal.
It's a lesson.
Just, I'm not doing my job right now.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not doing it correctly.
Correctly,
you know?
Yeah.
There's something I could be doing different. I will say this, the bombs, they're awful. They suck, and they suck hard, but that lasts less than it used to. You know, the feeling of, and I never really took it personally so much. It's just like, you know, if you play sports and you have a bad game, it's just like, you want to get back out there again and get that taste out of your mouth.
Right.
I will say this, the nights that are great, it is the most intoxicating feeling in the world. And I've done a lot of things. A lot of chemicals. This is a good one. It's really, really amazing to just really connect with that group and really have them in the palm of your hands and have fun with them. And then all the wonderful things they say afterwards. But as you go on longer and longer in your career, you know that that's just a one-off. That's just one night. And I don't think Vicky and I really bomb all that often, you know, so it's not like it happens often, but it's almost like it's kind of a good, you know, check. So don't get too cocky. You know, when I first started dating my partner, the first couple of shows she saw, I did really, really great. And then we had this show, it was in a bar in a restaurant somewhere, and it was just awful. And she used to tease me every once, she'd go, remember Mark, whose name, the club's name was Marks. And she's like, remember Marks. So it's, you kind of got to have those every now and again as just a check, you know, get yourself, you ain't all that or a bag of chips. So just calm down and do your job and make sure what you're doing, make sure you're in the moment. I think that usually when you do take that step back, it's somewhere along the way you got out of the moment and it became a little rote, or you weren't really connecting with that group of people. You were just up there yapping, and they feel that. Whether I don't think they consciously realize it, but they feel it.
Have you ever had like a bad experience with a heckler?
Not really a bad one. I had a weird one. Because hecklers, I've been fortunate. I don't have too many ever. But if it's just a talky person, you know, I might after a while, if they get up, if they're just too loud, I'll call them on the carpet about it. The only time I had a weird heckler was in Memphis, and I was doing a show, and I could hear this woman screaming back when I was backstage, and I came out, and this woman was so drunk. You know, it was a theater style kind of thing. It wasn't like a comedy club with little tables in this theater. And she was like right center, like second row. And she had a giant paper penis on her head. Giant, like 4 feet. And she put it on, and she was drawing, you know, and the people behind her were getting pissed. One, she was loud. Two, she had this giant penis on her head. And it was, and the security of the theater wasn't on it, you know, and I finally had to just stop the show and say, please get that off your head. And then, like, her friends would grab her and take her out, and I go, okay, she's gone, and everybody would applaud. And then she'd come back. And then the penis would go back on, and then I go, stop. Please get out. You know, take it off. Go. I was just, like, so befuddled.
Yeah.
Because she didn't come back. And I'm like, I should have. Where's the security? So they could get her out.
Right, right.
And that was the worst heckler. But, and she flashed me. She stood up and showed me her tits. And I'm like, please, cover those up. It's embarrassing. And I was just like,
how confusing.
You know, and I didn't tell the audience what she was doing. Because, you know, she was on the second row.
Yeah.
She just flashed me her tits. And please stop. You know, and then her friends would carry her out again. And then she'd come back. And after the show, I was selling DVDs. I kid you not, she brought that penis to me so I could autograph it.
Oh,
did you know? I said, no, please go. And then she was so drunk, she invited me to go bowling with her friends. And I was like, no, go away.
I was like, thinking.
Yeah, so that was
that's funny. Excellent. I don't know. I would have signed fuck off. Love Vicky Shaw. Yeah. That's great. What about you, Jenny? Any hecklers stand out?
I got to admit, Vicky, bachelor parties are the absolute worst. They're just awful. They think the show's about them, and it's just horrible.
Yeah.
So there's always that for hecklers. For the most part, I can usually put them down pretty quick. I did, however, early on in my career, someone talked me into doing a show at a nursing home for older people.
Oh.
And there was a woman who was kind of heckling me in the front. I don't even remember what she was saying. She was just yelling stuff out at me. And then about 10 minutes in, she fell asleep and was drooling on herself. So she kind of put her own self to sleep on that one. So she took care of herself.
That's funny. Yeah, we feel a little bit bad. Like, down in front, Ida, down in front. That's hilarious. Oh my God. All right, we'll wrap it up because I'm sure you guys have a busy day ahead of you. But I just, actually, really, in light of what's gone on, especially in Orlando, how important do you guys feel is it to keep people laughing? And is there like, you know, when people say too soon, is there such a thing? Because I don't feel like there is. Like, I feel like you need it.
No, we need that. And we need not only what Jenny and I do, make people laugh, but I'm even have a more concerted effort of being so out that it's now they've kind of woken up another sleeping giant.
Yeah.
It's like, not only by what I do is it important, it's even more important now.
Right.
And it's more important to be even more out. And what's happened is even my partner, my wife, she was always kind of nervous. You know, she's not in the closet by any stretch.
Right.
But being a police officer,
aware, yeah,
always aware of danger and, you know, things that can happen. And now she realizes, oh, wait a minute, we have to be completely out. This is not okay anymore.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, in light of that, no, it's not too soon. And it wasn't too soon after 9/11. I was on the road that was in September. I was working by October.
Wow.
And talking about it and doing it and out there and acknowledge the elephant in the room. You know, you have to, you know, and you just have to handle it.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And gently. With the audience and bringing them to it with the pain that they're feeling, whatever the situation. Take care of it, but acknowledge it. You don't ignore it.
Right.
I think there certainly wouldn't be able to, hopefully never be able to make jokes about it per se, but you do have to, you know, kind of talk about it and whatever. And, you know, I've been, Vicky and I are working together next weekend, and, you know, you get out there on Facebook, hey, come see us, come see us. And I sat down all day Monday and I just couldn't post anything. It just felt so creepy. And, you know, the next day I'm like, well, all right. And I even said in my post, I'm like, this feels really weird to talk about a comedy show, but you guys are all back at work. We've got to get back to work. Yeah. So, you know, please come see us. We're working next week, blah, blah, blah. And I was really grateful that a lot of people commented on that. No, no, we need laughter. We need laughter. Right. Go ahead. You know, but it just feels weird to ever, you know, come see my comedy show.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We're not, it needs to be serious. But I agree, you know, that I really hope what really, really infuriated me about this past weekend was the fear that it's just going to be another Columbine or another Sandy Hook in that which horrible things in the United States, you know, mass murders with guns. That we all light our candles and we all, you know, profess love and we change our profile pictures. And then in a week, it's gone again. And I think this real change needs to be made and action needs to be taken. A lot of people are posting, love beats hate, love beats hate. And it does. Love beats hate every time. But what does that mean in terms of action? Because just to say that, you know what, I love you. I love Vicky, but that's not going to do me any good. You know, it's not going to solve gun control. So we need to take action as opposed to just lighting our candles and just saying that love will conquer hate. No, we got to get, we got to grow up here and take action with stuff and you know, vote.
Exactly.
You know, I'm so embarrassed for us. You know, I feel you. If I were you, I'd pick up an English accent really quick.
I know.
It's embarrassing to be a citizen of a country that, you know, we have all these rights and all these privileges and 30% of us vote. It's disgusting.
And
you know, we need to change that. We need to get off our asses and quit taking these rights and privileges that we have for granted. Look at where they were in other parts of the world where they're standing in line, risking their lives to place a vote that may or may not even get counted.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think it's time for action now. So, you know, we got to be out there and we got to be funny and we got to do it. And that's our thing because we can say a lot with humor that other people can't say.
Right.
You can really get a point from someone laugh. First of all, you've taken a little bit of edge off. Second of all, sometimes those points get deeper in than just beating someone, you know, just confronting them and meeting their, you know, rhetoric with your rhetoric. You can just kind of ease a little bit and laugh about something. I think sometimes that can be more powerful.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. Tell me a little bit about what you guys got coming up and how did you manage to double bill this? you're both doing a show this coming up weekend.
We are working in Asheville, North Carolina. And
there you go, North Carolina with the bathroom bill.
That's right.
Thank you.
That's right.
That's like a Northeast lesbian mecca, though.
Isn't
Asheville like a Northeast lesbian mecca?
It is, okay. Actually, yeah. It's a little bastion of
liberal lesbians.
Yeah, right.
In the middle of North Carolina.
In the middle of North Carolina. Everyone goes there to go to the bathroom. It's really weird. So we're doing a couple of churches. Vicky and I work together a lot. I love working with her. We get along great. And I think it's a really blend because our styles of comedy are very complementary. So we have been doing, one is in a UCC church, which is
Universal.
Thank you, Universal. Yeah. And it's, forward-thinking people. One is an MCC church in Atlanta the following night, which is a gay church. And we really like those bar gigs are great because they're drinking and people are always easier to make them laugh when they're drinking, but it's fun to get a crowd that's really thinking and, you know, on your page and everything. And it's really important now to be out and be, like you said, Vic, just be as out and as gay and as loud as we can be about it and do that. But so we just kind of reach out to people or occasionally they'll reach out to us and do the show.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's good. So this one is this coming up weekend. Yeah.
June 24th in Asheville, North Carolina at the First Congregational, I keep calling it Congressional, First Congregational UCC. And then the following night is in Atlanta at the City of Light MCC.
That's great. So if people follow you on Facebook, they can probably find a way to get tickets, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And also my website, VickyShaw.com.
Excellent. Okay. Terrific. Ladies, I'm so happy to have done this. This is fantastic.
Yes, thank you so much.
Spread the word amongst the comedian, the comedy circuit, that I want to do more of these. Get people to find me, contact me, reach out, and we'll just give people a little bit of funny, but a little bit of the behind the scenes look. I think that's it's interesting, and I know a lot of people, I think, are too afraid to ask. Like, I'm just putting it out there. I want to know these things. Fantastic.
And there's so many comics out there that no one's heard of that are so freaking funny.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, we will definitely send some features your way.
Excellent. Great. Ladies, have a fantastic day. Thank you so much for your time.
You too.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.